All right, everybody, welcome, welcome. It is time for another Toolbox Tuesday.
Yeah, so we're gonna kind of dive in a lot to the mindset, I guess, of doctors and associates. I guess they're all doctors, so owner doctors and associates, and kind of my experience a little bit. And Jennifer's got some questions, and we're gonna kind of dive into the different phases and inflection points of kind of realization of how much you can control and how much you can coach and how much you can't control, and all those different aha moments that happen throughout people's career.
So if you have not been with us before, every Tuesday in our practices is Toolbox Tuesday. It is a theme of our practice huddle where we pick one of the hundreds of resources we have available in our asset arsenal. And this week we are launching our series talking about elements of production success. If you've been with us for the last few weeks, we've been diving into our exam analysis protocols and how we have developed a process for exam flow, evaluating exams, and all of the team and doctor integration that that compiles. So this week we're starting elements of production success where we're getting into the nitty-gritty, especially from a doctor perspective. And because it was oh so popular a couple of weeks ago when we interviewed Sten, we're going to interview him again as to how he started this process and taking us a little bit back on the journey from when he was a solo practitioner to being able to train associates in doing this. So he's very excited. He does not like the spotlight, but we appreciate him sharing the wisdom. So, all right. So, we're to start us off, Sten, when you were just a solo practitioner, how were you looking and evaluating your case acceptance and scheduling when you were just flying solo on your
I wasn't.
own?
So, all jokes aside, I think, when I first started out, I worked in a really busy kind of HMO type clinic, which a lot of us did as doctors. And I think it was a great start and a great way to, cut your teeth, quote unquote, right? No pun intended.
No pun intended.
But it was, I didn't know how much I was going to make or how much I scheduled or any of that until the direct deposit hit my bank account. For almost an entire year, right? And I was making more money than I knew what to do with, and had no idea when it was going to stop, when it was going to go up, when it was going to go down. Good weeks, bad weeks, good months, bad months, things like that. And so I wasn't focused on that. I was focused on getting faster. I was focused on getting making my preps better, cleaner, getting my seats better, cleaner, faster. That was my 100% my focus. I was diving pretty heavily into implants at the time and aesthetics, and I was learning as much clinical skills and clinical frameworks and all this other thing that I could. It was very much a technician mindset and not an owner's mindset. And I wanted to be the best technician I could be, period. I was not focused on my conversation with patients. I tried to, and this, what happened was I developed a repeatable kind of line or repeatable script. And I just repeated it. And I didn't really know if it was going to work or not work. And I think a lot of times it did. But that was probably about 10 or 10 to 20% of my brain power was going into how my exams were going. 80, 90% was going into my clinical efficiencies and my clinical skill set. So, and that's, isolate, rubber dam, whatever it is in the mouth, not talking to people. That was what I was focusing on, not isolate, rubber dam out of the mouth, actually talking to people, right? And I think in what I realized very soon after, kind of having my own practice for a few years and things like that, is it almost needed to be the exact opposite. And, because if your clinical skills lead your exam and your communication skills, you're not going to get to utilize your clinical skills. And so that was kind of some, and that didn't happen right away, by the way. That was something that was over time that I really started to kind of, figure out. But that was really, what I was thinking. And it really took, until I actually had one of my first coaches, for practice. When I bought the practice 100% in Santa Barbara, I had a coach just recommend, hey, just carry around a 3x5 card. And this is kind of back in the day. I guess I'm definitely dating myself. But I would carry around a 3x5 card, just a ripped out a little piece of paper. And every time I went and did an exam, I would add up what I thought that treatment plan was and see if it actually was scheduled at the end of the day. And I would ask for a report, hey, how much treatment did we schedule? Compare that to my completely false and almost laughable addition of what I thought I treatment planned and what was actually scheduled. And the reason we did this, because we didn't have at the time, we weren't giving patients estimates. We weren't giving patients, all the, treatment plans with, or adding up all their fees and things like that. So they knew what to expect. It was just, hey, you need 3 crowns. I'll schedule on Tuesday. It was essentially the way it was. And I know that's a way a lot of offices work still to this day. We are so far beyond that in our own practice. And I think now we have reports upon reports. We know exactly acceptance rates and treatment plan amounts and all these different things that we dive into every single day. And I know a lot of you guys do too, but those, that was the very beginning of me actually trying to attempt at tracking my own acceptance rate, tracking my own treatment planning rate. And it's really hard, even off 3x5 card, I wasn't going back and documenting each day in a spreadsheet or doing all the things that we're doing now. I was just looking at it and saying, hey, thumbs up, thumbs down. Hey, where'd that case go? What did this patient schedule or not? That was the beginnings of me actually just tuning into how was I doing on the communication front.
So when you were looking at that and the patient did schedule or did not schedule, how much control did you think you had over the actual scheduling portion after you walked out of the room?
At first, not much, because what happens for a lot of people, a lot of owner docs or docs that kind of get into a group practice or even a practice where they might be one of the only doctors in that office, is you really, you're definitely focused on clinical efficiencies, on your clinical skills. But what you end up doing a lot of times, and I definitely did it, is you focus unproportionally on rapport. On patient rapport. And instead of building that rapport through things like let the facts be the hitman, giving them internal pictures, showing them their problem, things like that, having them kind of build that desire. You're focusing almost on that kind of social aspect of it, whether that comes natural to you or not as a clinician. Some people it does, some people it comes very natural, that kind of gregarious mindset. Some people it doesn't, but whatever it is, people a lot of doctors and a lot of patients, unfortunately, associate that kind of quote unquote bedside manner as skill or care or different things. And I think there is some truth to that, but there's also some, I think there's some areas where that is very deficient. And so what I was doing in a lot of these exams was I was building a connection, I thought, with this patient, talking about everything besides dentistry. To the point where it was kind of a joke in the practice where the assistant would just kind of go like this, the hygienist would go like this, like, hey doc, you've been talking for 20 minutes, what the hell are you doing? Get this show on the road. And I thought that was my way to close cases. If I can build a relationship with this person within this kind of 10 or 15 minutes that I have to talk to them at their hygiene exam, they're going to schedule dentistry. Looking back on that, that's a borderline almost unethical approach, right? And thinking like, hey, I'm just gonna schmooze this person so they can get that. Now, we're not talking about treatment they don't need, but that was a tactic, and that still is a tactic for a lot of people. And now it almost kind of disgusts me a little bit, right? And looking back on that, right? I think, now it's really that true bedside manner is telling the patient what the patient needs to know enough so that they feel comfortable moving forward with treatment, right? And you can try to build rapport and talk about things other than dentistry in the middle of that appointment, but not 100% or not 90%, like a lot of times what happened. So that was kind of where I thought I had control, was in that building patient rapport. But I was very much in that mindset of, I got this one person in my office that I need to present all my treatment plans. I got my closer, right? And so if you have a good closer, you think you're great and you think you're supported and you have a great team, but that isn't always the most effective way to do it. It's almost never the most effective way to do it. Let's put it that way, right? And so what I didn't realize is, because if that closer didn't have a good connection or didn't have a good day or just didn't know what I was discussing in the exam or something like that, they're not set up for success. So if I wasn't doing my part to kind of set that person up to good success, or they're just off or just didn't have, certain things lined up, the case acceptance really wasn't that good with that quote unquote closer. They were just someone that was maybe more comfortable in front of patients, right? When you actually look at the stats weren't that great. So.
Well, and if it's all rapport dependent, then if a patient didn't schedule, they must not like you,
100%.
right? Or if they did schedule, they must like you. They want to meet you at the golf course or hope that you have cookies for them next time.
You know, it's a good point, because I think, you know, especially where we are in a lot of the, you know, areas around the country, it's, you know, the mindset that I'm going to build my practice through my social connections, or just, you know, 100% on referral base, is great. And we have a heavy portion of that in our practices right now, but it's very limiting to have that be 100% how you get all your patients, or all your rapport, or whatever it is, your reputation. You know, it's you really are only, you're limiting yourself to just the people that walk in your office and their network, or and doing a good job for one person, and assuming that person's going to refer, right? 100% where you should go for, you know, as much as you can, and shoot for that. But if we're focusing only on the doctor, only on the team to kind of, you know, bring in friends, family members, other people like that, you're really limiting your practice. You're really severely limiting your practice, especially if you're starting to do some higher dollar amount, more specialty type procedures, right? Some surgery, sedation like that. Because the number of people that need that within that network is very, very low. And you're going to run through that very, very quickly. So I kind of realized, and I kind of joked, you know, early on, it's like, you know, I don't want to build my practice on everyone, you know, at the golf club, right? I'm not a member of the golf club, but, you know, you're going to run out of people really quick, right? And then, you know, I just didn't want to have a practice of just friends and family. You know, I knew that wasn't a way to build the business that I wanted, the size, and to the, you know, to give me the lifestyle that I wanted. And it was very limiting. So I was going to have to find a way to reach other people in the community, and then build that quote unquote rapport very quickly with those people, even if they were just met me for the first time, or heard about me for the first time that day, right? Or when they scheduled, I should say.
Sometimes we don't want family or friends to be patients at all, right? Sometimes our friends is also the challenges with all of the feedback.
I mean, it's flattering to have people come to you, and I think people love that, but we need to understand that, you know, if you're going to have financial goals and business goals and career goals, they might not align with your friends and family's vision of how they think you should run your practice, or how they want to fit into a practice, right? And, you know, and I think it's just there's a lot of friction that can happen in there, especially even if they're just, you know, casual acquaintances, right? People have a very strong opinion about, you know, how you should run practice, how you should do the scheduling, how your front office should answer the phone, how all these different things. And if you're just fielding those comments a lot from friends and family, and from acquaintances, or kind of around your community, that gets very stressful. You kind of feel like
One
you're
of
exposed all the time, and you're just constantly fighting off, you know, different everyone's suggestions, and trying to please everyone. You're being a people pleaser to everyone. That's really not the way to reach, you know, financial and career goals at all.
I know what we've found, at least in our practices. I mean, the people that are true, real close friends, you know, I use this example all the time. I mean, Sten has some very close family friends that are, you know, they're brothers from another mother type of situation, you know, I joke with them about, but those are also the people that come in and they never say boo about the fact that they actually have a personal relationship. It tends to be the people that you just met in passing at Whole Foods that then all of a sudden they're calling you on your cell phone. I can't get through to the front office. I need to schedule a hygiene appointment. Excuse me, at, you know, 9 o'clock on Saturday night, you're calling me on the emergency line because you want me to schedule a hygiene appointment for you know, and that has happened frequently. Sten has had calls from on vacation and then they don't answer him right away. And then is everything okay with you? But are you serious right now? Like that was not an emergency. So then fast forward to having our first associate, then talking about case acceptance with them and exam flow awareness. What was some of the expectations that we had from an associate coming in? Using, you know, some of our associates as an example, we've had associates come in that had experience that were not just fresh out of school, but what were some of the expectations that we had, especially of those experienced associates coming in?
We had a little with our very first associate, we had a little bit different expectation, only because that person came in as a way for me to do a lot bigger cases more often, right? And what I mean by that is, essentially, there's multiple different strategies for your quote unquote first associate. And there's, obviously there's different pair mixes, there's different procedure mixes that you can kind of, work in. If the associate has, different skill set that you than you do, you could just be too busy and you're consistently booked out, months and months in advance. If it's only 1 or 2 months in advance a couple times, then you're going to eat through that really quickly with an associate. So that's not going to be a long term. That's not a long term strategy. This needs to be something that's, you have a long term strategy to kind of build that person up. And then the other approach is the one that we took was the this person was going to take the cases that were, to be perfectly blunt, not productive enough to be worth my while, but I didn't want to shoo them out of my practice. For example, if I'm doing a sedation case, I'm doing a surgery case, I'm doing implant cases, I don't have time to do a single crown, double crown, quad composites, things like that. And so before that happened, what we were doing is I was actually running, I think, 3 or 4 columns of production and, doing a surgery case and side booking all my composites, side booking all my single crowns, things like that. And you'd have a kind of like, three different, sometimes three different production patients happening at the same time. And that works sometimes. It works with a really skilled, assistant like Jennifer was with me for a long time. We almost felt like we were working like with a second doctor a lot of times in those situations. But it wasn't a long-term strategy. And so what this person kind of came along and did was take a lot of these side book, quote unquote, side book appointments off my plate so I could focus more on some of the bigger cases. And it worked really well. And it worked really well. But in the very beginning, we didn't have her doing any exams. It was literally just me putting things on her schedule and saying, this is kind of what I wanted to do. And we had per diems and things like that built in because I didn't want this person to, have think that they were just getting all the slop. Hey, look at this guy's, producing X number of thousands of dollars a day, and I'm here doing, composites and single crowns. And so that was the reason we did it, and it worked out really, really well. She got used to it, we got used to it, and then our practice changed, right? And that's when things went a little, not awry, but that's when things kind of shifted a little bit in the sense that now we had a practice where I think we had two locations at the time, and we were looking at, okay, now I need this person to actually produce on their own. They need to stand on their own 2 feet. They need to eat what they kill. And okay, how do we shift this from being almost like a, kind of a almost like a, just someone I could kind of shift as many things I wanted over to free myself up to someone that needs to drive their own schedule, drive their own production, drive their own team at the same time when I was, or even when I was not in the office at the same time. And that was a big shift in this person's mindset and in my mindset too. Cause I figured, hey, that they've been very, very productive, almost not even realizing that they're productive because of what I'm putting on their schedule. Just kind of thinking that, hey, that was just the way they were doing it. And then when they were asked to kind of do their own exams on new patient exams, hygiene exams, things like that, the treatment acceptance was just not there. And even though they had great rapport, patients love them, they were not making that connection between going and doing an exam and actually following through and making sure that patient schedule or finding out what they did or did not do right in order to allow that patient to be comfortable enough to schedule with the treatment presenter that came in, and to some degree, not even caring that much. And I think that was part of the per diem issue that we probably held on a little bit longer than we should have.
We did.
We
Not
did.
probably.
That
We did.
was my fault, 100%. But and just realizing, okay, in order to drive your own schedule, in order to drive your own production, there needs to be a desire. You need to have financial goals. You need to have career goals, and those need to be written out, be very explicit, find out exactly what they are. Because if we're trying to say, hey, you need to schedule this, this is your acceptance percentage, this is your production goal, things like this, but that doesn't resonate with what their personal goals are, doesn't resonate with what their family goals are, what their own personal career goals are. If those things don't match up and they can't see the connection perfectly with those, it's never going to happen. They're not going to see the reasoning because they're just going to think, well, why can't I just to go back to the way it was, where you're just putting stuff on my schedule? And I was getting a per diem. I was perfectly fine, even though it wasn't everything I wanted to make. I didn't have to do a damn thing. So why can't we go back to that? And that just wasn't the way our practice looked anymore. So that was kind of that big shift for us. And okay, how do I really not only become a leader of my own driving production, but now how do I lead people to kind of do what I've essentially taught myself and kind of learned through pain over the years and get them to kind of clue into that. And that's when some of our protocols really started to take form.
And I also wanted to just interject that this is was not a situation where we had another associate who came from a situation where an owner doctor was just keeping all of the treatment that they
Right.
wanted to do and then passing off the rest. This is also a skill set situation. You know, this associate that we're, and not to demean them in any stretch of the imagination, but didn't have a license for IV sedation, didn't have any training in implants, that kind of thing. So some of those buckets as far as where treatment went naturally fell. Now we've updated things significantly since then, and you know, all of our doctors are on track to be $1 million plus producers, and that's, you know, they're doing that through a round of different specialty procedures that they've added into the mix. And so, you know, now that we have multiple associates, what are some of the biggest excuses that we hear from those associates as far as why they're not hitting their goals? Because now you have any of our associates and they have their goal, they know what it is, they almost, I'm exaggerating just some extent, but minute to minute, where they know where they're tracking as far as their goals are concerned. So we've solved for that situation of now then working towards something, but now there's the excuse element that comes in.
Yeah. And there's a little bit of, you know, they don't want to, you know, and this, you see this with kids a lot too, right? If I don't try at something and I fail, then I'm fine. I don't have to, I can just say I didn't try.
Nothing
And,
risked,
but if I
nothing
go
gained.
and I give it my all and I still fail, that's very stressful for people. You know, and this is why people a lot of times they don't think go and give it their all because they're afraid of failure, right? And so they'd rather just not try and fail because they can just say, "Hey, I didn't really try. I could have done that if I tried," right? And we see that a lot with our doctors too, in the sense that, well, here's all the things you've taught me how to do. I did all these things, it didn't work, so I'm good. Because then it almost breeds this little bit of like they don't think for themselves in a way, like, hey, I checked all your boxes. That person didn't schedule, so it's on you, right? We're not really looking at, okay, did you really check those boxes? Or, you know, are you just saying you did? Or did you really, you know, try to fine-tune the way you're presenting certain things or communicating certain things and you know, and looking at it as a checklist and not just a framework. And I think we see that quite a bit. And that's human nature. And you're not going to avoid that. And we all have it, even as owner doctors too. You know, everyone has some degree of that mindset too. It's hard to avoid.
Well, I mean, what we're going to get into next week, as far as our sheet behind this and the elements to production success, was born out of a lot of these. We talk about, do you have an explanation for something or do you have an excuse, right? There are going to be ebbs and flows in production for any business. The flip side of that is we're not going to just buy into whatever is going on in the world, in politics, in the economy. Yes, all of those things contribute, but there is always, I would say, there's milk chocolate day, right? There's a milk chocolate day celebration in the year, if you all didn't know. We can blame it on that. It's there's always something, right? It's the kids are going back to school, the time is changing, the election is going on. Well, now it's, you know, the end of the year, it's the beginning of Q4. We might as well just fast forward to January because all of the insurance benefits are maxed out already, right? There's always going to be something else that's going on. We have to succeed in spite of that. So, you know, some of the excuses I know we've heard from our associates is finances, right? It's always going to be finances. Your patient base can't afford treatment, right? I don't have enough exams. I don't have enough new patient exams. I don't have enough new patients who need treatment. But the list goes on and on and on. And that's where this sheet came from of that. Okay, what is your response to that? Yeah, you're right. You might see three new patients in a row that don't need treatment. Does that mean that every exam you saw this week didn't need treatment?
Right.
Right? There are going to be patients who always come in and they only want to pay their $20 copay and they're never going to pay anything more than what insurance covers for. Is that every single patient that you saw this week that walked in the door and wanted help with treatment and wasn't expecting to pay anything for it? Or are there financial barriers that we can break down? So it's having some of those responses. I know that, you know, I don't speak for STEM, but, you know, we've had those conversations a ton where we'll hear back from our doctors, you know, we're not doing this, or your marketing, or there's not enough phones that are being answered, or this whole list of things. And we emotionally react to a, oh my gosh, we have to scramble and change everything that we're doing before really looking at, but what is the doctor doing to participate in turning the knobs that they can and controlling the controllables on their own schedule?
Yeah. And this is, the kind of the next phase of associates that we have right now is, really having the owner mindset, right? And we have owners now. They're all practice owners. But being an owner, having the business card, and acting like an owner are very different things. And that's a next, that's a phase that is probably never going to be solved, because there's plenty of, actual practice owners that have solo practices that really don't act like owners either. I was definitely guilty of that for a long time, probably. But it's, and understanding, like Jennifer said, that you have control over almost everything within your practice, your little world, whether it's a group or you're part of a bigger organization. You have more control than anyone else walking through that door. Whether that's leading the way from the front and showing people how it's supposed to do, whether that's improving on your exams or your clinical skills, a little bit every single day, whether that's just training an associate or kind of, or excuse me, an assistant or associate, and try to kind of teach coaching them on things that you learn, or even building a culture with the team around you that opens them up to being comfortable giving you constructive feedback and having people around you have constructive feedback. So those things are really kind of the next phase of, just having an associate that kind of, eats what they kill and kind of produces their own goals, to now one that's really driving a team, driving production, driving, coaching, and kind of, a little bit of this kind of self-managing, self-growing organization.
And this is a sneak peek of some of those metrics that we will be getting into in this series in the next few weeks of really kind of breaking down the nitty-gritty, how we've coached our doctors on how to implement that on their own schedule. So to be continued next week. In the meantime, if you have any questions for us, if you would like to hear about our partnership opportunities or our private client availabilities, please feel free to reach out. You can reach us by email at connect@pathwaydentalsolutions.com. Our website is pathwaydentalsolutions.com, and you can reach us on all of the social platforms. And in the meantime, we will see you next week.
All right, guys, bye.
All right, bye.